Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I'm at the German Shorthaired Pointer Club of America National Specialty today in Boise, Idaho, and I have some wonderful breeder and exhibitor and trainer and all kinds of great guys that are going to talk to us about just shorthairs as pets, as companions, as show dogs, hunting dogs, agility dogs, all those kind of things. So thank you. I appreciate Char, Bob, Dave, our videographer, Brenda. Yay, Brenda's our favorite person. Okay, so everybody, let's do this real quick. Brief introduction, number of years in the breed, kind of what made you fall in love with short hairs in the first place, and we'll start with Char.
Okay, my name is Charlene Rutar. Everybody calls me Char. Kennel name White River. Been in short hairs about 36 years. My husband chose the breed originally because he's a bird hunter. And after we acquired them is when I fell in love with them and found that I could enjoy this working with them as well in first the show ring and then also the field and the AKC hunt tests. And that has evolved into exhibiting successfully and now judging, and I'm a sporting group judge. So that's
wonderful.
Yeah.
Excellent. Mr. Bob Strait.
I'm Bob Strait. Been involved with short hairs for 30 years. Originally, our first short hair was associated with, we were falconers.
Very cool.
Short hair is an outstanding, versatile hunting dog, which is what sold us on that as a viable dog for our purposes. And we graduated into confirmation, American field, AKC field trials, and have enjoyed the sport and the breed.
Excellent. Mr. Nauer.
Yes, I grew up in Michigan, and my father had a short hair before I was born. Okay. So I grew up with the breed in my household. Yes, I remember with great delight turning 14 and being able to get a hunting license to go out and hunt with the short hairs. I then married Karen, who is a second-generation dog show confirmation junior-type person, and was introduced to competitive sports with short hairs. And so I've been doing that since the 80s.
Very good.
I am an AKC agility judge, and I've been judging about 15 years in agility.
Nice. Okay, so a lot of breadth, a lot of depth of experience here. And so what we want to talk to people about is, what's it like to live with a short hair? What are you looking for when you get a short hair pointer? And who makes a great short hair pointer owner and who does not? So, Char, we're going to start with you.
Short hairs, even in their standard, are described as energetic and athletic. If you just look at them, they are full of muscle and full of vim and vigor. That's a good thing if you have a little bit of room, some way that you can burn that energy off. And if you do a good job, and this is every day, not just Saturday and Sunday, every day, rain, shine, etc., if you can burn the energy off, they make as good a couch potato as any dog. Mm-hmm. We did move to a farm shortly after we got into heavily into the dogs, and that has helped.
Having a little space. Bob, your thoughts?
I think it's an important distinction that the people who get short hairs need to be aware of how they're going to enjoy their life with a short hair. They can be used for competitive purposes, and if you have a competitive bent, then you need to make sure you get a short hair that will fit that. If you want them as a pet, as Char said, you still need to be able to provide them an environment that will work off that energy. Otherwise, your furniture will become dust, and it is not a comfortable environment for everybody. So the most important thing we ever stress on prospective buyers is that the dog will be going to home in the right environment, whether it be competitive or a pet, but they all need to be aware of the high energy level the short hairs exhibit.
Absolutely. Dave?
So kind of echo both of those comments.
Right.
High energy, you need to have some way to vent that energy out, be it going out on jogs or doing hunting or doing something active. You know, obviously we do agility.
Agility. And that's what I was just going to mention. You know, not everybody necessarily wants to have a short hair pointer as a hunting dog. So agility, and you could talk about some of the other companion events that they, I would assume, are very good at.
Dock
diving has become very popular. Mm-hmm. Scent work. You find even German short hair pointers like at your airport.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Doing
TSA.
Yeah, with TSA and stuff. Yeah, they're one of the popular breeds for that. Tracking, agility, there's a lot of things. And then, you know, in the field, the hunt testing and field trials, that very active sports.
Absolutely.
In confirmation, I always remember I went to a seminar, a high-level agility seminar, and they asked the seminar giver what was their standard for an agility dog. Mm-hmm. They said structure. Give me a dog with structure.
Yes.
And so if you're going to do active sports with your dog, I don't care if it's confirmation. You give me the pick confirmation dog, that's my pick agility dog, too. I want that structure.
Absolutely true.
We should say, I mean, the breed is designed, German engineered, if you will.
Absolutely.
For versatility, ultimate versatility.
Yes.
Therefore, even though you look at them and people think hunting dog, right? Oh, no, no. That you do not have to hunt a German short hair. You just have to give it a job.
Right.
And I don't want to scare people and think that they're buying a maniac. When, you know, we've all said high energy.
Right.
And, well, that's because they're wonderfully muscled and wonderfully built to work in their chosen field for a long time with tremendous endurance. So they're not necessarily all crazy, but they do need a lot of exercise.
Right. And I don't think, you know, you wouldn't want to use a pejorative. I don't think the breed is crazy.
Oh, no, no.
You know, smart. I think high drive, high energy, stubborn.
Some are more biddable than others.
Yeah, and I think biddability is a key factor that breeders strive for overall.
Is. Absolutely.
Right?
And the Germans strived
absolutely
for in designing the breed, biddability.
So training's important.
And the training leads from biddability, and we've always felt that it's very important for prospective buyers to have an opportunity to look at a puppy's parents.
Yeah.
Because all too often you may look at a puppy and, well, this is great, but you don't see what the parent's background is relevant to where that puppy could be when it grows up. You may find yourself being surprised down the road a bit. We stress breeding for temperament. Whether you're in a confirmation competitive environment or a field trial competitive environment, if you don't have a dog with the type of temperament that everybody can interact with positively, you're going to find yourself frustrated and angry, and we don't want to see any prospective home have themselves in that kind of an environment with a dog.
Talk to us a little bit. We're going to move on here in half a second, but just in terms of living with them, talk to the sensibility that I have from my interaction with them, that the short hair is a dog that is happy to have you join it on its hunting expedition, but it doesn't necessarily require it. How would you relate to that?
I'm going to disagree with that a little bit.
Okay.
I think that they are extremely, extremely people-oriented.
Okay.
I mean, that's part of the package.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the biddability.
Okay.
And that's part of the hook why the three of us are sitting here.
Right.
We might like the way they look. We might like the way they work. But I really think that it is their temperament and personality that has us head over heels.
Okay.
So, no, I do not find them. There are differences in bloodlines.
Right.
I know that.
Right.
I understand
that. The one that I grew up
there
with came from Germany.
There are
differences from Germany
in bloodlines, but I do not find them stubborn or terribly independent.
Okay.
Not as needy as some of the other continental pointing breeds, but they can hang by themselves pretty well. But they would rather be with people.
Rather be with their person.
But I'd like to take that one step further to the extent if you're with a hunting dog, you want that dog to feel confident to accomplish what he was bred to do. I'm an AKC field trial and hunt test judge. And all too often I would see beginners bring a dog to the line and start talking to the dog right away. Well, not to overstate it, but that dog thinks you're God. And when you start talking, it wants to come back and find out what you're telling him. If you give the dog the opportunity to go out and explore on its own, as he gains confidence and he responds to you when you want him to respond to you, then you've got the best of both worlds. The dog will exhibit the confidence to do what is comfortable in and what you want it to do, and yet with good temperament, he will respond to your directions and come back under your control. So it's this combination of confidence, temperament, and your interaction with the dog.
That's good. Thoughts on that, Dave?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that's the key there is confidence and building confidence and
right.
making sure that you have a regimen that you can build those skills out because the instinct is there.
Right.
And that's the key. That's one of the great things about the breed. You know, different lines
right.
have different
right.
skill levels and,
mm-hmm.
and instincts, but mm-hmm. for the most part, the breed's got it all there.
Well, and I think that was the next step I wanted to go to and talk to folks who are looking for a hunting dog. And so let's talk about what type of hunting dog you're getting when you get a short-haired pointer. You're getting a continental versatile hunting dog. You're not getting an English setter, but you're also not getting a wire-haired pointer, right? So there are distinctions in here. So I would like to have an opportunity to share with people, you're getting a pointing dog, but you're also getting a dog that retrieves in the water, that retrieves at all, right?
Retrieves in no matter what.
Exactly. So let's kind of hash that out a bit. Let's talk about what it's like to go hunting with a short hair.
Well, it can be exciting. It can be frustrating. It can be all of the above when it comes to any dog you have out in the field. The interaction you have with a short hair is they are a people-oriented dog, and they want to please you. And in any event, to carry the point further, as a hunting dog, it is a versatile hunting dog, and they're going to work with you. And the proper training and the interaction, we encourage anybody that's going to hunt with a dog to train it themselves as much as possible or interact with a professional in the training of that dog and then move forward. But it's a blast to watch. If I had half the energy those short hairs exhibit in the field, I'd control the world.
Absolutely. We'd be Superman.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on that?
I think being out in the field with a German short hair is a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
There are differences in the lines. I don't want to stereotype, but, you know, we do have dogs bred more for conformation and dogs bred more for the field.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand and respect that the field breeders are coming from a different place and they're prizing some different qualities. So
as a buyer, you should talk to the person, talk to the breeder, find out what's important to them.
Yes. Find out what makes the breeder tick.
Yes.
And why the breeder has German short hairs.
Yes.
And you'll find an awful lot out about the kind of dog that they breed.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I breed for conformation, and my husband prefers hunting with what hunters refer to as a meat dog.
Right.
Which is a dog that's working fairly close.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, within sight, usually,
right.
depending on the terrain, but still out and doing its job with the confidence that these guys described. And then, you know, the teamwork and the bond is mm-hmm. something very, very special and very productive.
Right. A good bird dog makes for a much more pleasant day in the field.
Yes.
And yet, having said that, you don't have to hunt with an ugly dog.
No, you do not. And you nailed it. Ding, ding, ding.
And the other point relevant to the earlier comment about structure is that proper structure facilitates the dog's endurance and its ability to live a long, useful life. I've seen dogs with structure that's a little marginal. On the other hand, short-haired dogs have as big a heart as you can imagine.
Yeah, they'll go on.
And they'll go on and on and on. Will they live to 15, 16 years of age? Probably not. They'll have a breakdown of some sort. But their heart and their desire to please is so strong that they'll just keep on chugging away. And
right.
it's very important to try and combine temperament, biddability, the nose, and structure to create the package that will be with you for a much longer period of time.
Excellent. That's great, Bob.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that applies in agility and other companion events, too, doesn't it, Dave?
Absolutely.
Dave's the one that brought
mm-hmm.
it up to begin with.
Yeah. So it's just a key thing. And, you know, the biddability is important because in some of these sports, like if you want to go out and do, for example, one of the venues, mm-hmm. AKC tracking, for
mm-hmm.
example, you're kind of asking your dog to go out into a field and do a different job than their necessarily instinct is driving them toward, right?
Right.
And
right.
so that biddability in terms of teaching them what you want them to be doing and looking for. It helps a great deal for, say, tracking a human's footsteps, like right. you do in AKC tracking, to have that temperament and that bitability. And right. short hairs have that. They do, for
and
the most part.
Absolutely. And I think that... I think that one of the things that we were talking earlier about interviewing your breeder, right? Like, find out what makes your breeder tick. So when you're looking to develop a relationship with a breeder, and we always encourage that, people that yes. are buying a new purebred dog, go find a responsible preservation breeder. Find someone who is in it for the long haul, who does the health testing. We're going to get to that next. But we talked about everything from a meat dog to a field trial dog. So explain for people who maybe don't understand. A meat dog is ranging maybe 75 yards, maybe 100 yards.
It's working
yards,
with the walking hunter.
To the walking handler.
And they're out there to put dinner on the table.
Exactly.
That's where the meat dog phrase comes from. So they're working as close or as far as they need to work to find the game. Generally not out of sight. The field trial sport is a thrill beyond, and I've been to many trials, and I get it. Mm-hmm. And Bob can talk more about that because he's mm-hmm. handled dogs in that venue. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to have a dog three hilltops out that's a speck in the distance that's still under your control and doing its job is quite a rush.
I'm getting goosebumps because it's a game I love too.
There's a strong distinction in the field trial world between an all-age dog,
correct.
Which exhibits the maximum amount of independence and it will still be somewhat responsive to you. Generally, field trials, which originally were all foot-handled, gravitated to horseback-handled because the pros who were taking dogs in the foot said, after four or five braces, I'm tired of this. Let's find another venue. And that's how horses got involved. The horses led for dogs are run out a lot further because of the independence you can exhibit with a horse. And the dog...
They can see you further.
They can see you further. But having said that, an all-age dog is one component of field trial. Then you have shooting dogs. Then you have gun dogs. And gun dogs are generally what can lead into what Char has referred to as a meat dog. It's not a derogatory term. It's meat dog is a dog that is there to help you in your day-to-day hunting setup, wherever you are. Having said that, topography and terrain and general area of hunting also have to be taken into consideration because people that hunt with their dogs in the West are going to see a need for a lot bigger ranging dog than people in the Midwest or the Far East where there's a different type of game that you're hunting. Having said that, field trial dogs are bred to not a higher standard, but they stress the ability to scent, retrieve, the hunting skills that are pushed more and more than, say, a dog that is bred strictly for, say, a hunt test or a confirmation. But the field trial dogs are the bloodlines for a lot of the best hunting dogs you're going to have. And people on one side of the equation say, well, field trial dogs just range too far. And they will for certain types of environment. But I've had an all-age dog that could be gone for 30, 40 minutes, go to a gun club and walk with me in a pheasant club, and it's not going out more than 100 yards. So,
and so that is where I always think it's about the dog knows the game. And
exactly
that goes
right.
back to your bitability. And when you're looking for your puppy, a dog that is versatile, that comes from a pedigree that does a lot of things, right? Would be my thought on that, Dave?
Yeah. No, that's right.
Yeah. I think the best dogs are the ones that can do exactly what you're talking about, can go out and recognize they're at a field trial and go out and do that range.
Because that's that game.
And then recognize when they're in the on-foot hunting type thing. And those are the same kinds of temperaments and intelligence that allows them then to transfer that into some of these games mm-hmm. like agility and all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff, which really no breed was specifically bred for that, right? That's
right.
more of a training and short hairs just have that intelligence yeah. and skill.
They just love to play.
They do.
Yeah.
And when they're with their human and they're doing something
right.
that they've been taught that they
heaven.
Like.
That's nirvana.
And they get to run fast and jump over stuff.
Yeah, right.
But it really runs to the point of the buyer has to interview the breeder as well as breeders interviewing the buyer. There are breeders out there that you want to be careful that you ask the right questions and make sure you're getting the right answers so you don't find yourself with a dog that really isn't going to be comfortable in a more casual environment.
Right.
And if you don't start asking the right questions, or if you find the breeder is not asking you enough questions, I'd move away and find another breeder. It's just that you're not getting enough information.
Right. And I think the next piece of our puzzle here then is following along on that. It's a good segue, talking about health requirements. What are some of the health issues in the breed? Some of the health testing that you should be asking for when you're looking for your new puppy.
You can start out with what AKC has done with GSPCA, mm-hmm. with OFA in terms
with
of
the CHIC program.
The CHIC program, mm-hmm. and the CHIC requirements, which are the minimal health testing requirements that are recommended by the breed club.
Yep.
And making sure that you've done hips and heart and eyes and elbows, and we have a genetic disease CD, cone degeneration that we want to have tested for.
Okay, so those are your CHIC tests.
Am I missing any?
Hips, elbows, eyes, cardiac, and CD.
Those are the main ones. And then there's a couple of recommended ones on top
of
that.
Yeah. Oh, it goes on.
Yeah. There's a significant number of tests that serve a very important purpose, but it's just as important for you to deal with a breeder who will guarantee the health of the dog. Right. And if there's a problem that's not accident-oriented but is health-oriented, that they'll take that dog back, because the breeder needs the warrant that the dogs they're selling have met all these testing requirements. You get certificates for all the OFA requirements. And if you don't have the opportunity to get that kind of information from the breeder, maybe you're dealing with the backyard breeder who's not willing to comply with the CHIC and the OFA requirements.
Some of the health testing. So do you see any other problems in the breed that pop up that you can't necessarily test for? Do you see?
Sure, we do.
I mean,
if we're honest.
Yeah.
There are problems. First of all, the short hair breed as a breed has a reputation of being relatively clear.
Right.
Of
pretty healthy.
Serious health issues.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that they're...
Life happens, and it's important for us to know that.
They're God's creatures, and they're, you know, biological organisms, mm-hmm. and Mother Nature gets involved. We've seen epilepsy crop mm-hmm. up in the breed, mm-hmm. and that is something that the researchers are struggling with,
yep.
to find an answer to. I personally think there are different kinds of epilepsy, mm-hmm. and that's why it's so hard to get a handle on.
Yeah.
And we have cancers.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Cancers.
A variety that are, I won't say common in the breed, but there are some that pop up. You know, we do have a variety of different kinds of cancers, like mm-hmm. mammary cancer, hemangiosarcoma, and some stuff like that.
And I've seen cardiomyopathy and mm-hmm. heart murmurs mm-hmm. and subaortic stenosis.
Right.
All of these things are in our breed, blessedly, at a pretty manageable level. And the responsible breeder is going to evaluate their breeding stock as they need to make sure that they're steering away from
that.
We don't have much trouble with hips anymore, but that's because we've pretty much religiously been screening our hips for at least probably 30 years. Well, when I started, short hairs didn't have hip dysplasia.
Yes.
And, yes, they did. But it's pretty easy to breed away from.
Well, and I think that's really important when we're talking to people that are coming to look at a purebred dog. And we talk about the fact that purebred dogs are consistent, they are the healthiest canine colony, and that we are trying to actually make healthier dogs, and that is something that responsible purebred dog breeders have been doing for 30, 40, 50 years.
I would say in that range.
Yeah. And I think that it's working.
It is.
And the results are there.
It works. It totally works. I mean, we cannot guarantee that Mother Nature isn't going to throw us a curveball, but we can feel comfortable enough with our stock that we can stand behind them.
Right.
And if we've taken the steps as breeders to provide information that these dogs have passed certain tests that OFA offers up, then we're on the right path to make sure it's going to be a healthy dog. But as both these other individuals, you can't test for cancer. You can't test for epilepsy right now. And other issues that'll crop up unbeknownst, because the gene pool in the dog goes back quite a ways, and you don't know what hidden gene has been there for, and all of a sudden it pops up and there it is.
Well, and I want to make an observation that I heard this from Dr. Marty Greer, that does Pure Dog Talk's veterinary voice, and she's wonderful. And she makes the comment that I've kind of thought in my head, but she just spit it out. She said, the human race is the least inbred mammalian species in the world, and we have epilepsy and cancer and diabetes and hypothyroid and whatever. Hello? Yeah. So breeding purebred dogs is not creating these problems. I think that's very important to be aware of.
Right. Oh, no. If anything, it's limiting.
Exactly.
The problems. But I don't think any of us are elevated enough that we can eradicate.
No. Well, and Mother Nature, you know.
Mother Nature has her own plan, and all you can do is try and work within that plan, and whatever we can do to mitigate some of these problems from not occurring.
And work with ethics and responsibility.
Exactly.
So that when you're dealing with your increasing puppy family, you're dealing as a person that can be highly respected. And I think
honesty,
the greatest compliment any of us have is repeat buyers.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I would agree with that entirely. Okay, so we have just a couple more minutes. In closing, the very, very, very best thing about a German Shorthair Pointer, your very favorite thing about your breed, what is it that makes them incredible?
To me, it's their level of enthusiasm in just about whatever they do, and your ability to participate with it is just phenomenal. When I'm watching a young athletic dog race out in front of me on a horseback, and I'm like, God, I wish I could do that. That's part of what I really enjoy about the short hair.
For me, I think it's the range of things you can do with the dog. They're athletic. You can do everything from, I mean, there's people that do, I think it's pronounced skidjorning.
Skidjoring.
Skidjoring.
You know, all the way to hunting, all the way to dog sports like conformation and agility and things like that. And just having fun, right? Mm-hmm. Going out and just jogging with your dog and all that. The breed is versatile, not only as a versatile hunter, because that's really what it was bred for, but it's versatile as a companion too.
Absolutely.
It's a combination for me of the quality of the relationship that you can have with this intelligent, athletic, up for anything animal. And honestly, if I could give it one word, it would be joy.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
You look at a German Shorthair doing whatever, sometimes what they're not supposed to be doing.
There's
that's
that
the
too.
Most joy.
And they exude joy. And they keep us up and at it.
Yeah. Well, it's really important to note that if you have a litter of 8, 9, 10 puppies, one or two of those puppies is going to be meeting the level of expectation for us on a competitive environment. The rest of those puppies are going to go to homes that need to have all the different things that they can do with those dogs, from skijoring to running on a trail with them to hiking the woods and going into the beaches, all of which is the realm of a dog that really enjoys himself and enjoys being with you. That's why we're doing what we do.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, lady and gentleman. I appreciate your time.
Well,
best of luck. Best of luck this weekend at the National Specialty, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Laura.
How much is that doggy in the window?
Okay, crew. I hear it pretty much every day now. I love pure dog talk. And that makes my heart happy, because I love doing it. I started hosting Pure Dog Talk as a way to reach out to members of our community with education and resources to enable you to succeed and move forward in your goals and ambitions. And your response has been literally overwhelming. The podcast has been downloaded well over 250,000 times to date. That's incredible. All of this information is free to exhibitors around the world at the touch of a button. But here's the reality check. Money really does make the world go round, guys. So I created a special patrons group. This funding source helps cover the expenses of audio editing and website hosting and technology and like that. Patrons keep Pure Dog Talk's fountain of knowledge flowing freely. And like the NPR of dogdom, our patrons support Pure Dog Talk with monthly gifts. We even offer advertising and sponsorship opportunities that you guys may not have known about. So drop me a note, laura@puredogtalk.com, and I'll let you know how you can help share the love.
How much is that dog in the window?
All right, crew, we are back with Allison Foley from the Leading Edge Dog Show Academy. Welcome, Allison.
Hi, Laura. How are you today?
I am great. So Allison has our tip of the week, and tell us what that will be, Allison.
So, Laura, I've been lucky is that I've noticed a lot of new dog show exhibitors at the shows. And thanks to like Leading Edge Dog Show Academy and Tip of the Week on Pure Dog Talk, I have lots of people asking me a lot more questions. And
awesome.
And actually, I love it. Yeah, I love it. So, you know, I recently had somebody in there saying, like, you know, whenever they're grooming their dog just really, really fights them. And part of the reason they can't get this dry or that trimmed is they're just fighting with the dog and they're exhausted, like, by the end of the day. And I was like, okay, yeah, well, let's work on that. So, you know, I went over expecting kind of a difficult dog to deal with. And so, like, I was trimming the dog and, like, showing them how to dry it, and the dog was really fine for me. And I said, oh, they were, like, amazed. And I said, okay, well, let's see you do it, right?
Right.
Well, the problem is that they were grooming the dog so that it was easy for them,
right?
So they were, like, trying to hold the leg in a position where they could see every single hair, and it was easy for them to stand in a natural position and just la-dee-da, point the dryer right where they needed to dry the hair, right? But for the dog, it meant that basically they needed a chiropractor at the end of the day.
Right.
Because that was not a natural position. And so then I started, like, kind of looking around. And so one of the things I think people, especially new people grooming, especially when we get nervous at a dog show and we're trying to go quicker, or trying to make sure it's perfect, but think about where your dog's legs can move naturally, right?
Yes.
So, you know, you see people drawing a back leg, a stifle, or the inside of, and they're, like, holding the dog's leg so high. Like, a dog would never hold its leg in that position. And if they did, like, contort to stretch or something, you know, it would be for a split second, not for 15 minutes while you're drawing it,
right?
So think about how far forward your dog can comfortably reach his leg. And if you have to get on your knees and kind of, like, have a crooked neck to get the armpit of your dog dry, then that's how it's going to have to be.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Same, you know, when you're drawing your dog, think of how a dog would maybe cock its leg to pee, or how it would stretch out its leg behind it. And again, not when it's, like, stretching or jumping over a fence, but, like, in a natural position.
Right.
So, really, when we're grooming our dogs, it's all about their comfort. We can need to go to a chiropractor when we're done.
Right.
Definitely the dog should not have to. And I think, like, with these people, I, you know, it was easy. It was a 5-second fix. I was like, okay, this is what you're doing wrong. And she emailed me 2 days later and she goes, oh my God, it's so much easier to groom now.
Right.
But sometimes I think we forget that. I think we forget it's, like, the very simplest, most natural things to experience people are the things that sometimes newer people have a harder time getting. And she wasn't doing it to hurt the dog, and she wasn't even carelessly thinking. She was just working so hard to get the hair to look perfect.
Right.
Forgetting about what the dog could actually tolerate.
Absolutely. And sometimes, not in every case, certainly with every breed, but sometimes I think it's helpful when we can teach the dog to lie down to be dried.
Oh, definitely.
We can't do that with some of our breeds, but our drop coat breeds and some of those things where they can actually just lay down and go to sleep. And I love that.
Yeah, me too. And I mean, I've trained setters and my Shelties to lie and fall asleep. And it's been, you know, a big, huge help.
Huge.
Yeah, definitely.
The Briard that I did, that was the best thing in the world, was that dog would lie down so I could line brush him or blow him out or whatever it was. And it was some kind of heaven, man.
Yeah, I bet.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you, Allison. Listeners, don't forget, when you check out of your Leading Edge Dog Show Academy course, you can remember to put Pure Dog Talk 25. That will give you a 25% discount off your class. And you can have a cup of coffee on us. Thanks, Allison.
Thanks, Laura.
The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.